Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the weekly worldview. Hosted right here at the McBurney compound. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. I'm sorry, I'm a little out of sorts. Been driving, took the family on a road trip up into the Black Hills and the Dakotas. This is the time of year to see it, I tell you. And I highly recommend the whole Mount Rushmore spearfish, Custer, that whole area. Just gorgeous. Go check it out. A good time was had by all. My extremely attractive audio engineer says she's not going to make fun of the Dakotas anymore because she liked it. She liked it. What's the deal with, as you get older, you start to want a farm and cows and chickens and stuff? What's the deal with that? I think that happens to almost everyone who lives in the suburbs. At some point, you look around and you think, what am I doing with my life? Working hard to pay an enormous mortgage on an enormous house when we could have cows and chickens and goats? Would goats be okay? Sheep? We think we know the difference now between a Hereford and an Angus. Boy, there's nothing more beautiful than an Angus bull, I'll tell you what. Very few things are as impressive as an Angus bull out there. Just gorgeous. We had a great time. Highly recommend it. But we are back and settling back into the suburban rat race here in the Bebs, in the McBurney compound. Finished up the World Wars last night on the History Channel. Any of you been watching that? Yeah? The World Wars. You know what struck me the most by the World Wars series on the History Channel was how many times Colin Powell compared himself to Patton and Omar Bradley and Dwight Eisenhower and just about every other great general in American history. Colin Powell had to say, well, we this and generals like us. I'm thinking, who do you think you are, colon cancer Powell? Get out of here with that. You couldn't even wipe the mud off Patton's boots. But anyway. And then, you know, the show kind of portrayed Hitler as a traumatized artist, and he came off slightly homosexual, although they never said it outright. He came off as a bit dainty, at least in his early life. Anyway, it was not that impressive, the World Wars. So there's my review of that. If you haven't watched it, I would recommend you don't bother. But because it leaves out so much stuff that it really gives short shrift to the World Wars. But I suppose that's unless you had 16 hours. You remember the old the World at War series? Remember that one? Mm-hmm. It was like 26 1 hour installment. That's what you need. Yeah, this pathetic attempt by the History Channel was, well, just that pathetic, and we'll move on, I suppose. Casey Kasem, remember Casey Kasem, America's Top 40? He's been killed by his daughter, in my opinion. Yeah, he was on life support, he was on a morphine drip, and he was being given water and food, and one of his daughters had him unplugged, and now he's died. He was 80, he was quite old and quite sick. Yeah, he was past 80. He was 86, or he was quite old. Anyway, he wasn't old enough that I would have killed him, though. I would have kept him plugged in and kept the morphine going. And she said that the food and water were causing him to die, and so she withdrew food and water until he died. So I would have fed him and kept giving him water until he died. And if food and water makes you die, well, I'll keep giving you food and water, and because I know if I stop, you're going to die. I don't know. Anyway, that's just my opinion. I don't know that I would advocate that she be arrested or anything. Have to know more about the story. But it was disturbing to read about all that. And I'm going to get into this Iraq situation, but I don't even know if I should bother because Chelsea Manning, you remember Bradley Manning, PFC Bradley Manning, the traitorous leaker who leaked hundreds of thousands of classified documents to WikiLeaks? PFC Bradley Manning has a column in the New York Times where they refer to her as Chelsea throughout the column. They, he, she, it refers to itself as with the feminine pronoun. Anyway, I doubt I have much I could add to Bradley Manning's New York Times column. My, how far the Times has fallen. Anyway, I haven't had a chance to read it and probably won't read it. Don't spend a lot of time reading the Times. But let's move into, well, a government school story. Reason number four, to keep or get your kids out of the government schools. Now, Bob Enyart and I, years ago on the radio, started a list of reasons to keep your or get your kids out of government schools. And today's story just happens to fall into reason number four. If you remember back, if you roll back the tape, number one, the government schools are officially atheist. That was reason number one. Number two, the government schools promote sexual immorality. Number three, your children will not be taught mathematics. Number four, your children will not be taught to read. So, and then it goes on, we're up to, I think I've got reason 700 and some odd in here. We'll get to that. But reason number four, your children won't be taught to read. We go to Chicago from EAGnews.org, which is it's the Education Action Group Foundation. It's Juan Williams and some other liberals who want to rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic of the government school system. It looks like they're against Common Core and they're for school choice and all the window dressing that so-called concerned Americans who are concerned about the education of America's youth. So EAG News is just that, and they report that from the Chicago Public Schools, Paul Robeson High School, their 2014 prom theme was "This Is Our Story." Yeah, and Robeson High School is located in the Englewood neighborhood on Chicago's south side, one of the poorest and most dangerous neighborhoods in the city. 40% of the freshmen and Chicago Public Schools do not graduate. 91% of graduates have to take remedial courses in college because they don't know how to do basic math. EAGnews.org reports that the families there can't afford an alternative. And for the most part, Chicago Public Schools are not equipping the children to succeed in the future. And they note that the average Chicago Public Schools salary for a teacher is $76,000 a year. And the average income per capita in the Englewood neighborhood is $12,255 per year. They point out the income disparity as if that's one of the big problems, because they're a bunch of liberals. First of all, families can't afford an alternative. I would have to ask my extremely attractive audio engineer how much it costs to homeschool our kids every year. Okay, we know that it costs about $50,000 a year, because that's how much my extremely attractive audio engineer could be making if she decided to work full-time. So it costs us $50,000 off the top, but we're not going to count that. You'd make more than $50,000? Yeah, I think, all right, we'll say $75,000. Off the top, it costs us. So our educator here at the McBurney compound stays home, forgoes a salary. So, but if you don't count that, it only costs a few hundred dollars a year per student, right?
Yeah, just the books.
Just the books?
Maybe. Per student?
Yeah. Per student.
And then we're going to reuse.
We're going to recycle. Let's call it $1,000 a year it costs per student.
Yeah, that's a lot.
All right, so that's an alternative, first of all, to sending your kids to the government school. And by the way, the promotional card that was handed out by Paul Robeson High School with their 2014 prom theme, "This Is Our Story." It was "This Is Our," A-R-E, story. This is our story. That's embarrassing. So reason number four to get or keep your children out of the government schools, they will not be taught how to read. Yeah, the faculty didn't notice. I don't know, maybe it didn't go through the formal editing process. Or perhaps the teachers who read it didn't realize. Now we move on to reason number 748 to keep your or get your children out of the government schools. The administrators and teachers do not know right from wrong. That's right. 11-year-old Ishmael Perry out in Berkeley, the Berkeley Unified School District, California. He was accused of using bullying language, which is a big one these days, apparently. And as punishment, he chose to clean up the school's bathrooms for 2 weeks. That was one of the punishments he was allowed to choose from. Now, a good spanking was not on the list, but cleaning the toilets was on the list, so he chose to do that. Well, he ended up coming down with whooping cough and missed 4 days of school. His mother's very upset. Now, the district superintendent has said, now he says the discipline was inappropriate. Having him clean toilets was inappropriate. And I can just hear the Limbaugh and the Limbots, the Hannitized one. All of them.
Well, that's what a young man should be cleaning toilets. It's good hard work. Teach him a lesson.
Anyway, a note to school administrators and just anyone else interested in helping the youth of America. You should not make a kid do something good as punishment. Cleaning toilets is good. It's a good thing. Good hard work for a young man. But forcing him to do it as a punishment is wrong, and it confuses the young lad, and it makes the adult who imposed it look like a complete and utter moron. Yeah. So that's reason number 748. The administrators and teachers don't know right from wrong. This kid's mom is just ballistic over this. So she sends her kid into this godless environment full of idiots and ruled by morons, and then she's mad when they do something stupid. That makes her kid sick, allegedly. We don't know if he caught the whooping cough off the toilet or in some other manner. But anyway, the punishment did not fit the crime in that case. All right, now, reason number 666, of course, to keep or get your children out of the government schools, they may be shot and killed. Yeah, I know, it happens all the time, but it could happen, right? Well, there was a school shooting in Oregon this past week, and in searching Jared Padgett's home, that was the murderer, detectives found a journal in which he described a plan to kill his classmates, and in it he called some of them sinners, and he railed against those who smoked cigarettes or took the Lord's name in vain. Jared apparently grew up a Mormon. He loved guns. He enjoyed video games. He had a plan to join the military, and the Oregon news outlet reporting the story, OregonLive.com, reports that besides attending school, Jared's life revolved around his family, which pretty much kept to themselves. Jared especially loved being with his dad. He loved his mom, Christina. Well, his parents divorced in 2011, and the mother left and gave the kids to the dad. She surrendered primary custody of him and his sister to the father. The five brothers and sisters were so furious with their mother for leaving them that they even stopped talking to her for quite a bit. Anyway, one family member said that, quote, a divorce would affect any kid, but I wouldn't say that a divorce would drive someone to do what he did. Well, apparently it might. Apparently it might. That's just the latest school shooting. The murderer shot one student, killed one student, and then killed himself. And just a tragedy. Awful. Well, not a tragedy, but just horrible, horrible. Can't understand it. I can't understand how you people could be convinced that it's okay to send your kids to be kept and educated 6 to 8 to 10 hours a day by a bunch of people who are demonstrably incapable of properly educating your children, and yet you send them there, and I just don't get it. I think I'm strange. Obviously, I'm strange. I'm among the remnant of sane people who still believe in God. and still believe that the government's not responsible to educate my children. Where did we ever get that idea? Oh, that's right. It was from the Proctocracy. Worldview, welcome back. Put those guitars away, boys. We've got more trouble from the Proctocrats. Yes, the proctors, the lawyers who run everything. Well, they've foisted, well, just look what they've foisted upon us now. Speaking of young people, the immigrants, allegedly children, are flooding across the border because Barry, the chief proctor, announced, I think about a year ago, that, young kids, they won't be sent back, they won't be prosecuted, they won't be interred, they won't be called criminals. And so what happens? Well, I got a report from WorldNet Daily. Ex-border agents say that this flood of immigrant children that has hit the news this week is deliberately arranged by the American government. President Obama being at the top, the National Association of Former Border Patrol Officers, well, members were interviewed by WorldNet Daily, and they released a statement in which they said, "This is not a humanitarian crisis. It is predictable, orchestrated, and contrived." Yes, meant to play on the compassionate side of Americans by having all these kids show up, I feel terrible for them. So it's working. Yes, they say thousands of unaccompanied minor Central American children came to America with the encouragement, aid, and assistance of the United States government. More than 33,000 have been caught in Texas alone over the last 8 months. These are minors under 18 flooding in. Although 33,000 in 8 months, I don't know that that's any more or less than typically. I don't know. A memo from an official with Customs and Border Protection said the current policies are serving as an incentive for illegal aliens to sneak into the U.S. Yes, you think? Yes. Obama's policies, some officials say Obama's policies for deferred action for young illegals, and the federal government has said it is hunting for lawyers to provide legal help to the children who are in the U.S. illegally. Yeah, Obama's policies are attracting illegals, is what I meant to say. You know, he's instructed deferred action for young illegals. Basically, these young poor kids, their mom and dad send them saying, "Go, Jorge, you can get in. Obama will let you in, and then you can bring us later." Anyway, but don't worry about these kids. They're going to be fine because the Department of Health and Human Services has announced a $350 million funding opportunity. Yes, related to these kids. They announced on Friday for this funding opportunity for residential care providers for the thousands of illegal alien minors who are crossing the border. These grants are required to provide these illegal young people with what? Food, shelter, housing? No. Family planning services. Maybe we could apply for this. We've got an extra room in the basement. You know, maybe get $5 million. We could take in some kids. You just have to make sure they have proper family planning services. Yes, the HHS is going to provide these kids with family planning services. And, of course, applicants are expected to deliver care in a manner that is sensitive to sexual orientation and gender identity. So we've got a humanitarian crisis occurring right now. And the government is obsessed with sex and perverted sex and sex amongst teenagers. That's what they're obsessed with. I think that they've all gone insane. HHS expects to grant 60 awards that will last for 3 years. We could get a 3-year contract to hand out condoms to the kids coming across the border. And if they want to be called he or she, you just got to call them whatever you want. And you get a grant from the HHS. No, not gonna fill out the application. You can download it right there. No. All right. Apparently we're not going to apply. HHS predicts that 60,000 unaccompanied illegal immigrant children will enter the United States this year, which is an 800% increase from 2011, the last year for which reliable data is available. 800% increase. Well, something certainly changed in the minds and hearts of the youth of Latin America. And I think this is orchestrated, by golly. I said a long time ago that there's a chance that Barack Obama is a sapper who snuck under the wire and he's planting bombs all over the place. And it seems to me that the bombs are starting to explode and it's becoming obvious that Barry is actually an enemy agent who's infiltrated. He's gotten in and he's got the levers of power and he's going to use them to destroy the country. Well, that's just my opinion. Now I could be wrong, but this makes me think I'm right, that he's actually an active enemy agent sent in to destroy America. And well, I'll admit that that most of the proctocracy is also to blame for allowing him to do what he's done. And, of course, the idiots who elected him are somewhat to blame. But primarily I lay this at the feet of the Christian church in America for allowing this to happen. Yeah, and it goes back a few generations. The evangelicals that lost America. Pathetic. All right, let's move on to some personhood news. Why is personhood absolutely necessary? Because it really is the only way to tell the truth about the murder of innocent people and where rights come from. And it's really one of the most effective ways to teach children right from wrong and objective truth and reality. You start with the personhood of your neighbor, no matter how small and defenseless and voiceless. Well, it lays a good foundation to build an education upon. Now, Bill and Melinda Gates have been obsessed with education. As you know, they are the driving force behind the new Common Core, the latest strain of virulence in the government schools, this Common Core that even some liberals are upset about. I haven't looked into it, don't know what it's about, don't care because it doesn't affect me. And if you're subjecting your children to Common Core, you should be arrested for child abuse. If Common Core is something that you're worried about because your kids have to go into the government schools, it's your fault. You're the one who's at fault. You need to change what you're doing about your child's education. But let's get on to Bill and Melinda Gates. Melinda Gates, the wife of the Microsoft founder, and a self-professed Catholic, whatever that means. You know what that means? She's not actually a Catholic. The reason they have to say self-professed Catholic is because everything she does in her life looks like she's not a Catholic. But they point out that she says she is. So there. Bradley Manning says he's Chelsea, and he insists you use the feminine pronoun, and Melinda Gates says she's a Catholic. Great. Self-professed Catholic. She says that the question of abortion should be dealt with separately from basic family planning. She says, when I get asked about my views on abortion, I say that, like everyone, I struggle with the issue, but I've decided not to engage on it publicly. And the Gates Foundation has decided not to fund abortion. That's what she said. So Rush Limbaugh, on his program, I'm driving across 3-4 states this past week. I happened to tune into Limbaugh. In some places in North Dakota, you can't get anything but Rush Limbaugh. Or cattle futures, grain prices, country music. That's it. And there's always, at least one Mexican radio station, which is strange to me. Even in North Dakota, you can always get at least one Mexican radio station. I'm not sure what's up with that. But I heard Limbaugh. He mentioned this briefly in passing as an aside at the end of a segment, and he said this is a nuclear bomb among the liberals, that she has said this. And that was it. That's all Rush said about that, because, you know, Rush is a mile wide and an inch deep. That's why. Yeah, I know he's talented and he's very skilled broadcaster. I'll give him all that. But he's not very deep, and he's certainly not wise. So Melinda Gates says she has decided not to fund abortion, almost in a flippant offhand way in this interview. And I pulled this story down from CNS News. Well, actually Breitbart, but I believe CNS did the work on this. CNS reports that the Gates Foundation has an endowment of $40 billion and supports international family planning programs, providing grants in the United States and over 100 countries. They funded Common Core. That's here. Okay, the Gates Foundation has awarded Planned Parenthood and its associates $71 million in grants from prior to 2009 through 2013. That's a lot of dough for baby killers. The Gates Foundation currently partners with the United Nations Population Fund, UNPUF, which has helped to administer China's one-child policy. Did you ever wonder who it was that helped the Chinese to murder all those children? Yeah, it's the United Nations. And Bill and Melinda Gates, yes, administering China's one-child policy. The UNPUF partners with the International Planned Parenthood Federation. In May of 2013, Melinda Gates, Kathleen Sebelius, and late-term abortionist Leroy Carhart shared the same podium and were speakers at the International Women Deliver Conference in Kuala Lumpur. That's an ironic title for a pro-abortion conference, Women Deliver. That's a conference devoted to making sure women don't deliver. And she shared the stage with Leroy Carhart, a late-term abortionist himself. But now she says they're going to stop funding abortion. Well, folks, she's lying. That's all. She's lying. And she'll probably recant the statement before my next broadcast. She'll probably recant this statement. Just like Planned Parenthood lies when it says they don't use any of the federal funds for abortions. It all goes for breast cancer testing and STD tests, penicillin shots, condoms. Yeah, right. Is that all I had on this? I guess there is no... I don't think this is a nuclear bomb among the liberals. This is Melinda Gates lying. Lying about the fact that she's a Catholic. Lying about the fact that she's going to stop funding abortion. She's just a liar. And I guess that's all I had to say about that. Now, on to some personhood news quickly. A story from Slate.com. A notoriously liberal, ignorant website. And the headline was How the Realities of Biology Complicate the Personhood Movement. So, of course, I have to click on that. The reporter at Slate says, what if at the very beginning stages of development you absorbed your twin's cells? It's a phenomenon called a chimera. Yes, some people are chimeras. Probably not many, but certainly a lot more than we know about. You remember we had the story of the mother who had a miscarriage and some of the fetus's cells had been absorbed into her body or her twin, I forget, altering the DNA. So I suppose it happens. The reporter says that if you have a transfusion or a transplantation, or when a mother absorbs some cells from their offspring or twins absorb cells from each other, these are chimeras. What do such developmental complexities mean? Bioethical and policy discussions have largely focused on responses to laboratory creations, these cross-species combinations that you've heard about, human-animal hybrids and all that. But they miss the fact, says Slate, that people and politicians care deeply about what it means to them to be human and how we can protect life. The personhood movement shows the urgent need to understand what we are really talking about. And Slate reports that the personhood movement is not going away soon and remains active through organizations such as Personhood USA. And the reporter goes on, debates about laboratory combinations have led to legal and regulatory responses in some countries, but, says Slate, it's different when the chimera occurs naturally. Does a chimeric person combined from two fertilized eggs get two votes? Well, according to some Personhood legislation, he should. And the Slate reporter insists that what he wants to do is understand what is at issue here. He goes on to talk about the Sanctity of Human Life Act in the federal government. And Slate reports that the sponsors want to protect what they see as human life. They want to prohibit abortions. They may love life, but they do not understand its earliest developmental stages. These Personhood people just don't understand. When we say life begins at fertilization or cloning or its functional equivalent, we just don't get it. And this is a problem with people who are supporting Personhood who won't come out and say, yes, what we really want to do is stop you bloodthirsty maniacs from murdering babies. We want to stop abortion. That's what we want to do. And you may be right. We might be a little bit dumb about exactly all the vagaries of human reproduction, and we may not have PhDs in embryology and biology and all that. We might be a little dumb, but we're not murderers. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Finally, one more note from the Slate reporter, whose name I failed to copy. He says, proposed Personhood legislation and the Personhood movement ignore the existence of chimeras among other developmental phenomena. So if we don't understand it, it's okay to kill it if we're not sure what it is? Wouldn't it be better to draw the line as far back toward the beginning as possible so that we don't offend the Creator? Oh no, at Slate, they're all atheists and legalists. Atheists are highly legalistic. And so he uses this issue of chimerism to justify killing the baby. I heard one politician say, it's like you're standing in a parking lot and there's something in a paper bag and it's moving and you're not sure what it is. Is it okay to stomp on it? Well, no person in their right mind would say yes. That's why pro-aborts are not in their right mind. They're mad dog killers and they need to be stopped. And really, Personhood is the only way I see to stop it. That's why I'll be voting yes on Amendment 67 in Colorado this year, and I encourage the voters in North Dakota, where we just were. They're going to be voting on it this year, too, in North Dakota. And so we encourage them to vote yes on Personhood, because it's only the only way to teach these mad dog killers the truth. All right, now let's move on. Hillary Clinton is upset that someone at NPR thinks she's not queer enough. An NPR reporter asked her in an interview, she said, were you glad that the Supreme Court struck DOMA down? You remember DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act signed by Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton? Well, what the reporter should have said is that the Supreme Court issued an opinion against DOMA, but I'll get back to that in another story. But she asked, and Clinton said, of course I'm happy, and you know, again, we're living in a time when this extraordinary change is occurring, and I'm proud of our country. I'm proud of the people who have been on the front lines of advocacy. And then her and the reporter argue back and forth about who's the queerest. How queer are you? Are you queer enough? You're married to a man. That makes me suspicious. You say, did your opinion evolve, or have you always been a queer? Who's the queerest of them all? They go back and forth for quite some time. Finally, at the end, Hillary says, I did not grow up even imagining gay marriage, and I don't think you did either. This was an incredible new and important idea that people on the front lines of the gay rights movement began to talk about slowly but surely, and they convinced others about the rightness of that position. And when I was ready to say what I said, I said it. So there, I was queer before it was even cool to be queer. I'm queerer than you ever were, she said to the NPR reporter, whose name, I didn't copy her whole name down. I just have the transcript, and it's Gross. Her last name must be Gross. Anyway, I found that to be somewhat ironic. Anyway, I think we can all be assured that Hillary Clinton is more homosexual than anyone ever was, ever before, and she's quite proud of it. And she always wanted to marry another woman, but she had to marry a man because in America, to get for, you know, your political career, you have to subjugate yourself to a man. But she was always a lesbian, and she advocates lesbianism, and she's the biggest lesbian of them all. And I think she made that clear to this reporter Gross over at NPR. Anyway, the talk radio world was quite a buzz with talk about Hillary getting into an argument over queerness with the NPR reporter. She's the queerest of them all. Now, earlier in the week, I pulled this story down because I was shocked and stunned that the White House, on Monday this week past, was attempting to distance Barry from the decision to exchange the five Taliban leaders for Bo Bergdahl. They actually floated it out there that it was Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel who made the decision. And Hagel goes into testimony. He's like, what? What are you talking about? Anyway, but that by the end of the week, didn't matter. Everybody was talking about the fall of Iraq to the Islamists. And we'll get to that right now. Oh, Barry came out and said, no, it was me. What are you people talking about? It was, of course I made the decision. Someone on my staff said that it was Chuck Hagel. Well, that's just ridiculous. That was me. I made the decision. All right. But by the end of the week, all anyone could talk about was the fact that the Islamists, who, by the way, we reported here that they had captured, which city was it that they captured a month and a half ago, 2 months ago? The scene of some of the bloodiest battles in Marine Corps history were fought in this particular city that I can't remember the name of it. Not Crimea. No. My goodness. You'll have to forgive my extremely attractive audio engineer. She didn't grow up with Western Civ, and English was not her first language. The city where all the Marines fought in Iraq. It's embarrassing to me that I can't remember it. So English is my first language, and I can't remember. Anyway, the Islamists had captured it a couple of months ago, and I basically said at that point, Iraq is going to fall. They've captured Tikrit and Mosul, and they're on the outskirts of Baghdad, and they're fighting. The Sunnis, it's a Sunni insurgency. You remember that Saddam Hussein was a Sunni. The Sunnis are a minority in Iraq, and the current government is led primarily by Shia, who are friendly with Iran and all that. Just to give you the backstory on this, it's what Michael Savage warned us about 10 years ago, that George W. Bush may very well hand Iraq to the Iranians because he's such an idiot, and it turns out that he was right. Well, Iran now is coming to the aid of Iraq in the wake of a Sunni insurgency that has claimed two key northern cities and now threatens Baghdad. This is from Fox News. 150 fighters from Iran's Revolutionary Guards have been dispatched by Tehran. The commander, Qasem Soleimani, even met with the Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki on Thursday and pledged to send more Iranian brigades to the defense of Baghdad. Maybe as many as 10,000 Iranian soldiers be sent in to put down the Sunni Islamist insurgency. Maliki is believed to be considering the offer. In fact, this evening it looks like he took him up on it because the Americans rejected a request from al-Maliki to bomb the al-Qaeda-affiliated ISIS. Anyway, they've overrun Mosul and Tikrit. Fallujah, that's it. Yes, so they took Fallujah 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago. I reported on that. I said Iraq is done. It's going to fall to the Islamists. So anyway, now predominantly Shiite Muslim Iran is pledging to combat the violence and terrorism of the Sunni extremists. A lot of people believe these are former government officials now aligned with Islamists in this revived Islamist group, an offshoot of al-Qaeda. Folks, I warned you people that unless we Christianized Iran, the war would be lost. And in failing to do so, we have sentenced the children of Iraq to another generation of war and bloodshed and misery. We should have been bulldozing mosques and building churches and executing the former governing officials. And like I say, I think I held out the option at one point that we just send in the entire government of Texas, take it and fly it over, put it in and put them in charge. Make Iraq the 51st state or something like that, a protectorate, and Christianize it. But we didn't do that because, well, America's not Christian anymore. We don't know how to do that. But that was the only hope. That's the only hope for the Middle East is Jesus Christ. That is he is the only hope for that hellhole part of the world. We move now to Nigeria. From the War File, the Wall Street Journal reports that Boko Haram has kidnapped 20 more girls just a few miles from the small town where it abducted several hundred back in April. You remember Michelle Obama tweeted, "Bring our girls back." So they've done it again. The area where they kidnapped these girls, I'm not going to tell you the names of the towns because you people don't know where they are. I don't know where they are. But it's not Crimea. Okay. it's not Crimea. the village of Garkin Fulani. Anyway, so Boko Haram, while we've all been distracted because the whole rest of the world is falling apart and we're being taken over by faggots and lawyers, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, that's kind of, maybe I should edit that? I'll edit that. All right. Boko Haram is up to their same old song and dance. The country's military, Nigeria's military, was nowhere to be seen during the hours-long raid in which the Islamist maniacs kidnapped another 20 girls. Instead, the job of preventing more kidnappings has fallen to a group of vigilantes who say they've been left with only hunting rifles to go up against the rocket launchers and heavy machine guns of Boko Haram. The Nigerian government maintains that its military is performing valiantly. Meanwhile, Boko Haram is kidnapping these girls in towns that are in the same area. So you got to figure Boko Haram is somewhere in that general vicinity. And it would be difficult and ugly and bloody, but it would be a glorious campaign for someone to go in and destroy and kill every one of these people in Boko Haram. With extreme prejudice, exterminate them. It would be a glorious campaign. And I wish someone would do it. But this is bad religion and bad government. What bad religion leads to bad. And now, the president of Nigeria, Good Luck Jonathan, he claims to be a Christian. But bad religion can be, I mean, even Christianity practiced poorly is bad religion, which leads to bad government, and which leads to a kleptocracy. Everyone stealing everything from everyone else, which is what's going on. Boko Haram has asked for 800 cows for the return of these 20 girls. These are common criminals, for crying out loud. Pirates! Boko Haram are the zombies everyone's afraid of. And Nigeria is the city from the Dawn of the Dead movies. So I'm trying to relate to the young people. Yes, you're worried about zombies? This is it. This is it, and it's the result of bad religion producing bad government. And it's also a product of
the de-Christianization of the West and our inability to project any righteous force upon anyone at all anymore. There was a time when we had the intestinal fortitude and the confidence of our convictions that we could actually project righteous force and do good in the world, but we have lost that. Europe has lost it. The United States has given it away under the sapper who slipped under the wire, Barack Obama. And now the whole world is destined to burn. All right, well, don't hold your breath. That's all I'm saying. Don't hold your breath. You're waiting for a hero. Maybe it'd be the Israelis? I don't know about that. The Israeli army, according to McClatchy, has intensified its search for three missing Jewish teenagers seized by Palestinian militants. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu blames Hamas and the Fatah government of Mahmoud Abbas. Although there has been no credible claim of responsibility for the disappearance of the teenagers, McClatchy reports that Israeli officials said they believe that they're being held by militants hoping to exchange them for prisoners in Israeli jails. Israel holds some 5,000 Palestinians in prison, and Israel has already shown their willingness to deal. So the kidnappings are encouraged at an official level by the government, making deals with people who should just be killing them. There are certain people you just have to kill as a responsible governing official. You have to make war upon them until they are all dead. And that's all the Israelis should be doing with the Islamists and the militants and the Hamas. They should just be utterly exterminated. But instead they make deals and now there's been a kidnapping. Now, in the McClatchy story, and in the story I had read earlier, I did not realize that one of these missing kids is an American. And had you listened to the Secretary of State, John Kerry, this morning when he condemned the kidnapping, you wouldn't have known that there was an American involved either because he didn't mention it. He said, quote, "The United States strongly condemns the kidnapping of three Israeli teenagers and calls for their immediate release. Our thoughts and prayers are with their families." And he just bolted from the microphone. That was Naftali Frankel, 16 years old, one of the kidnapped teenagers, is an American citizen. That was not mentioned by the Secretary of State, which tells me we're in real trouble. Yes, the enemy is running the government. Enemy agents have taken over the government. John Kerry's one of them. How could a Secretary of State not mention he's an American? How does that happen? But don't worry. Everything's going to be fine because Dan Shapiro is the U.S. ambassador at the embassy in Tel Aviv, in Israel. That's right. And this past week, he said he was proud to join with the municipality of Tel Aviv in celebrating LGBT Pride Week, and he flew a rainbow flag just below the American flag on the flagpole at our embassy in Israel. So don't, everything's going to be just fine. Everything's going to be all right. There's nothing to worry about. We've got heroes at the American embassy and that was reported by WorldNet Daily, by the way. The homosexual flag flying on a flagpole. I'm telling you, the enemy has taken over. We are now not in an obviously in a terroristic sense, but normal people in America, we are now going to have to be part of an insurgency. Yes, because the enemy has taken over, and they're running the place. Forget the proctocracy. They were bad enough. Now it's actual enemies of America hell-bent on the destruction of the country. Meanwhile, down in Texas, Texas Governor Rick Perry appeared at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco. This is a group of fiscal conservatives. They're fiscal conservatives. That means they only care about money. But he was asked whether he thought... Now, this is in San Francisco, the Commonwealth Club. They asked him whether he thought homosexuality was a disorder. Because they're always trying to set up a guy like Rick Perry who tries to pawn himself off as some kind of conservative Christian. And he might be. He could be. I don't know. But they always try to trip him up with questions about... Now, he was there to speak, by the way, about, fiscal issues, I'm sure. He was there to talk about energy independence. That's an important issue to conservatives. You ask Sean Hannity, that's one of his top five. He's going to save America. Energy independence. Yet Sean Hannity has a five-point plan that eschews any social issues. Only talks about money. And he's got his five-point plan. I think he may run for president. I don't know. But a fellow like Perry, they try to trip him up on the social issues. So even though he's there to talk with fiscal conservatives about energy independence, he's asked about homosexuality. Why? Because homosexuality and abortion are much bigger issues than education choice or energy independence or controlling the border or balancing the budget with the Penny Plan. I forget what his fifth one is. It's something else inane. They're much more important issues. That's why they ask him about it. Because energy independence doesn't mean anything if you're butchering 1.5 million innocent people every year in your country. Controlling the border and balancing the budget is meaningless when you legalize and promote sexual immorality. These questions are far more important. This reporter from CBS in San Francisco was, it was a guy on the radio. He was upset that someone had to ask Perry about homos when he was there to talk about energy independence. Well, that's because energy independence is like 53rd on the list of what's destroying America. And homosexuality is up there in the top five. Anyway, so Perry's asked if he thinks it's a disorder. And Perry says, well, I may have the genetic coding that I'm inclined to be an alcoholic. But I have the desire not to do that, and I look at the homosexual issue the same way. Well, the people in the San Francisco audience audibly gasped. They were shocked and stunned that he compared it to giving in to the alcoholism or some other sin that's common to man. Anyway, in February, a federal judge struck down Texas' ban on same-sex marriage, calling it unconstitutional. So here, I want to get to this because my friend Greg Jackson, he has a thing about this. The judge is striking things down. What actually happened was a federal judge issued an opinion against Texas' ban on homosexual marriage. But in the media and in the culture, they say he struck it down. Why? Well, it's because he struck it down. Yeah, and I hate to break that to my friend Greg Jackson because Greg is technically correct. Judges don't have the authority to strike down laws. They can only issue opinions. But the problem is we gave judges the authority 40-some years ago to legalize abortion. We gave them that. And so now we've made them the ultimate authority. The proctocracy has anointed the judges as the ultimate authority, and the people have gotten in line. Why? Because they had a desire to be selfish and murder inconvenient people. And so they gave the judges the power. And now the judges have the power. And they exercise it all the time. And they will exercise it. They will legalize homosexual marriage in every state at a federal level. They will legalize drugs. They've got the power. And, we gave it to them. And so there. Is that all I had on that? Oh, Bill Maher. Got to get to Bill Maher here. We're almost out of time. All right. From the Bad Religion File, Ralph Reed, founder of the Christian Coalition, appeared on Bill Maher's HBO show, Real Time. He was promoting his new book, ironically entitled, Awakening, How America Can Turn from Moral and Economic Destruction Back to Greatness. Author Ralph Reed. Okay, how can America turn back from moral and economic destruction? First, stop listening to Ralph Reed. Whatever you do, don't buy his book. What are you, a moron? This is a guy who, alongside Focus on the Family, what's that guy's name? That psychiatrist, that head shrinker, who everybody thinks is so great. Focus on the Family, come on. I'm really having a problem with names today. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, we all know who I'm talking about.
Crimea.
No, it's not Crimea. Anyway, the focus, he, alongside Focus on the Family, lost the culture war. Ralph Reed did. Now he's got a book about how to save. He's been saying he's going to turn America around for 30 years. What are we, idiots? Anyway, Maher asks him in the interview, why is faith a good thing, says Bill Maher. Atheist, God-hating, perverted sexual deviant, Bill Maher asks Ralph Reed, why is faith a good thing? And Ralph opens with, well, speaking for myself, faith gives me a sense of purpose. Speaking for yourself? Are you afraid of just giving Bill Maher the gospel? For crying out loud, speaking for you. Then he goes on with a bunch of other drivel that a second-year seminary student would regurgitate to get a B+. Well, Maher, of course, on cue, cited the wars, the Crusades, terrorism. It's all related to religion. It's a bad thing. Well, Reed, he drew Bill Maher's attention to homeless shelters and charities, which are Christian. But Bill Maher said, quote, but you can do those things without believing in magic, unquote. And well, Bill Maher's correct about that, as much as I hate the guy. Maher also mentioned, just remember that, he accused Ralph Reed of believing in magic. And Ralph Reed didn't refute that. Why? Because Ralph Reed, if he is a Christian at all, he believes in magic. And God is something that he's only willing to speak for himself. And anyway, Maher goes on to mention a new Gallup poll that shows almost 30% of Americans believe the Bible is literally true. And Maher asked Reed, are you one of those? And Reed said yes. He said he believes the Bible is literally true, said Ralph Reed. I find that hard to believe. So Maher then jumps in, well, what about the adulterous woman who was to be stoned to death? So this is high school freshman level textual criticism from Bill Maher, which is about all he's capable of. So Ralph responds right on cue with some more first year seminary student drivel. Pat answers about what he thinks Jesus wrote in the sand and all this. What he didn't say, what I would have said to Bill, was, Bill, because in that situation, Jesus was asserting the fact that he had the right to forgive sins. And he could even forgive yours, Bill, as disgusting and vile as you are. He could even forgive your sins, I would have said. But Ralph Reed just regurgitated the first-year seminary student answer that gets you a B+ on the final exam about, well, he wrote in the sand, and, well, we think this, and I think that, and my seminary teacher said this. And Maher comes back with, well, if the Bible is a perfect book written by a perfect guy, why is that story in there? Why did Jesus need to come along and correct his dad? I don't get it. And Reed goes on with his second-year seminary student drivel about, well, we're all fallen and we're all sinful and yada, yada, yada. I'd have said Jesus was setting up the confrontation, Bill, by asserting that he could forgive sins. He knew that that would outrage the religious leaders. And Jesus was getting ready, moving toward the ultimate confrontation. And then I would have told Bill the story about how Jesus died and rose again and could forgive his sins and all that and repent and all that. And of course, right on cue, second year seminary washout, Ralph Reed says, but Bill, you're ignoring the New Testament. Yeah, because Maher goes on and talks about how, well, the Bible says homosexuals and adulterers should be stoned. Bill, you're quoting the New Testament. It's not any of those. None of those verses occur in the New Testament, says Ralph Reed. Is that right? Because I thought Jesus quoted Moses. Well, maybe I'm wrong about that. Actually, I'm not wrong about that. So Maher, of course, says, well, so the Old Testament, the Jew God, he's bad. And, of course, Reed says, well, I didn't say that, but he just said that. He just said you're talking about the Old Testament, not the New Testament. This is why Ralph Reed flunked out of seminary school, probably, because he couldn't get the story straight. Anyway, Marr says that, well, if God's perfect, the book should be perfect, it should all be perfect. And Marr makes a good point as a rational human being. Marr is influenced as much by John Calvin and Augustine and Plato and Aristotle as, well, Ralph Reed. And all the Christians who actually believe in magic. They do believe in magic. I had a discussion with a family trying to tell them that God is not a magician. He cannot peek into a future that has not occurred. They almost burned me as a heretic right there in the restaurant. But Ralph Reed, he's afraid. He's unable to engage in a debate with Bill Maher because Ralph Reed, if he knows God, he barely knows him. And he knows an awful lot of cliches about him, but he doesn't actually know him. But Bill Maher will be without excuse on Judgment Day because Bill Maher has sat across the table from a number of people over the years who do know God and don't believe in magic and would have stood him up on that question. And God's going to say, here's why you're going to hell, Bill. All right. Yes, it is going to fall right on Bill Maher's head. And, well, we'll just have to see what happens to Ralph Reed. That'll be interesting to see that man on Judgment Day. I'm not going to go off on him anyway. All right. Now, quickly, we genuinely are out of time. I went kind of long with that. Was there anything I missed in there? Not one of those verses occurs in the New Testament, says Ralph Reed. Just an idiot. All right. He makes Bill Maher look like a theologian. All right. From the Justice File, a little over a year ago, Andre Davis was released from prison after serving 32 years for a murder conviction when new DNA evidence was submitted showing that he was likely innocent of the murder that occurred in 1980. I reported on this story a little over a year ago. I remember this guy's name. I remember saying, condemning the Innocence Project, talking about how these filthy lawyers go into 30-year-old cases and try to find any exculpatory flake of sliver of anything and get these people out of prison. Well, Andre Davis now faces a new murder charge. Yes, Andre Davis has been charged with the murder of 19-year-old Jamal Harmon, who's found dead in an alley, stabbed and shot to death. Davis apparently had an argument with the victim during a party over a dice game. Oh, by the way, Davis, who was arrested after he bragged that he had cut someone's throat, causing the police to come and investigate, also has on his record charges of attempted murder, aggravated discharge of a weapon, and 2 counts of aggravated battery, proving my point that this fella should have been put to death 25 years ago. Forget the murder. No, 35 years ago, before he killed someone in 1980. Anyway, just wanted to update that story. Speaking of updates, from the Justice File, a jury in Fresno County Superior Court accidentally cleared a suspected burglar. They mistakenly signed a not guilty verdict form. This is what happens when the lawyers pick the dumbest people in the room to be on the jury. They accidentally signed a not guilty form, and the judge says he was then forced to set the man free because, hey, the protocol is the protocol, the paperwork is the paperwork, I just work for the proctocracy. I'm not expecting a thing. They had to let him go. The jurors were confused by the verdict forms. One said guilty, one said not guilty, but the jury was confused, and Well, you're right. Government forms can be difficult. The judge says, I can't believe it. This has never happened to me in over 100 jury trials. The burglar is described by the Sacramento Bee as being a career criminal with multiple felony convictions. But he was set free because the jury was so dumb and the system is so broken. But the burglar who had been released, was found stabbed to death in the street just a few hours after his release. He died. See? The system works. Don't give up the faith in the American justice system. He was found stabbed to death in the street just a few hours after his release. Okay, that's all we've got this week from the Worldview, folks. Thank you for tuning in. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at AmericanRightToLife.com, Theology Online, Personhood USA, Denver Bible Church, and of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studio. Should the Lord tarry, I and my extremely attractive audio engineer will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.